Okay, so l'chaim, l'chaim. Toda on the refreshments for Hanukkah.
And for finishing the perek.
And we're going to finish the perek. Ezer Hashem. Which is not something that we usually get around to doing. But we've been really very diligent this year so far. We haven't missed a shir yet. And we've been moving at a reasonable pace. And it's also the shortest perek in Shas almost. Okay, so here we are. We're at the top of Samech Vav Omud Beis. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines down. Hahu de Omar la lebetayu konam shei at neheneti ad. All of these, this, the rest of the whole Amud is agarata or halachic agarata. And as is often the case, a perek will end with some agada. And you know, if understood properly, usually it offers a window into the themes that were raised in the perek. If we've been successful, we will remember what we talked about in the intro shiur a few weeks ago. About what nedarim are and etc., and that will come back to make sense here. So man says to his wife, "Oi, see that I got chocolate on my gemara. Hahu damala, konam shei at neenetli ad shetamei tavshilech leRabbi Yehuda leRabbi Shimon." So apparently she was a terrible cook. This Gemara comes on the heels of the earlier Gemaras. We're talking about all cases of problems with Shalom Bais. So he says, "Oh, you're such a terrible cook. You're Osir Bahano. You can't get any Hano from me until you give some of this terrible food that you make to Rabbi Yehuda and to Rabbi Shimon." The Rishonim ask, you know, like, what are the conditions? Is it to Rabbi Yehuda or to Rabbi Shimon? Or is it Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon? But the pshat obviously seems to be to Rabbi Yehuda and to Rabbi Shimon.
What's the point of this?
So that they should see how I'm suffering. They should see that what a.
But he wasn't one of the time.
What?
He was a stam guy.
No? He's a stam guy. He's a guy. We don't know who he is.
It's a connoisseur of good food.
Look, in other words, we don't have to.
The one that said that every Jewish woman is beautiful.
Yeah, but it didn't say that every Jewish woman is a good cook. No, Rabbi Yishmael said. This is Rabbi Shimon, right? But so I've said this, all Jewish women are beautiful. But nowhere does it say that all Jewish women are good cooks. So what is going on here? Oy. What?
Just don't learn the darn thing.
No, it's terrible. I never... Well, So Rabbi Yehuda ta'im. So Rabbi Yehuda took a bite. Now this is like a strange neder. He can create a neder which involves like a third party. Right? As, like we understand that the husband makes a neder where he assers his wife behano. Right? From him. But here there's like a third party who's not, who may have no interest in what's going on, who isn't kafuf to the husband, right? You know, so like he sets up this condition where it's either Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Shimon will or will not taste this woman's rotten cooking. So Rabbi Yehuda took a bite. So Omar, so how could he take a bite? So look at...
Why
would he want to take a bite?
Because it's the interest of the getting the guy out of his nether, because nethers aren't good things. So if you can find a way to get a guy out of a nether, then you should do it, no?
Yeah, and maybe that's what Rabbi Yehuda was saying. But at the same time, the whole thing is something of an affront to Rabbi Yehuda's, to the Chachamim's kavod. Right? So...
Why? Why would that would... No.
Here's this rotten food. Right? I'm going to force Rabbi Yehuda to choke down some of this rotten food that my wife makes.
Which, that's the whole purpose. Like, if I have trouble, if I'm having a problem, so what do? You go to the rabbi and say, "Listen, this is my problem." So sometimes it's enough to spit out a problem. And sometimes you gotta like, push the envelope and you gotta prove the problem. So listen, I'm having problems at home with my wife.
Yeah.
She's a horrible cook. Here, taste this. Help me. So, you know, some rabbis might say, you know.
It's like my wife will, like, you know, pour herself a cup of milk, say, this is spoiled. Taste some.
Husband sitting here who hasn't had
right.
experience.
What? I wanted to. You just told me it's spoiled. What? I'm not sure.
Almost 10.
Give it a little while.
So why should Rabbi Yehuda, like, you know, get involved in this? So, but Rabbi Yehuda did. Because for the reasons for Shalom Bias. And what's the proof of this? A Kal V'chomer from a Kaddish Baruch Hu B'chvodo V'atzmo. Ma la'asot Shalom Bayit ben ish le'ishto. Amra Torah Shmi Shnichtav B'Kedusha Yibche Al HaMayim HaMa'arim B'Safek.
What? Matim for Hanukkah?
Matim for Hanukkah?
The Ram quotes is the end of Hanukkah. This
Gemara. Nachon. So, V'ani Alachat Kama V'Kama. So in the case of Sota, where Kadosh Baruch Hu allows his own holy name, his own Shem Hashem, to be erased, which is generally something which is very severe. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, is mochel on his kavod in order to create Shalom Bayis. So I, Rabbi Yehuda, I can eat a little, I've eaten worse things in my life. Alachas kama v'kama. Rabbi Shimon, lo taim. But Rabbi Shimon was makpid on his kavod, and he would not eat. Omar, yamutu kol b'nei almana. Yamutu kol b'nei almana v'al yazuz Shimon mimkomo. Better that the orphans should die, that I shouldn't bend on this matter. So the Rashi points out yamutu kol b'nei almana klomar yamut habal. Right? In other words, if the husband, if this guy who made the neder dies, so then the children will be yatomim, and the wife will be an almana. Yamut habal v'tei hi almana v'achar kach yamutu baneha. V'lo yazuz Shimon mimkomo sheyitom tavshila. That I should eat from this dish. V'lahachi lo ratza litom ki hechi delo lirgale lemidar shelo yihu kalim b'nedarim.
Two different approaches you can do. You can try to cancel the nether quickly, or you can make it so you won't want to even go in the first place.
Right. In other words, if you give in, so then, makara, as soon as they eat from the dish, what happens?
The nether is over.
The nether is fulfilled, and it's over. Or, you teach the guy that he's a moron for making such a neder like this. And you don't eat it. And this creates an obvious circumstance where, you know, he can't live. There's no way he can operate like this. And he'll have to get hatarat nedarim. I mean, in theory, he could divorce her. But the more likely outcome would be... You could call out for pizza.
But what would be your... But, okay, so you gave it to Avishimah. Avishimah didn't eat it. But what's your petach to give it to Antal Sundar? You still have to have a reason.
So you'd have to go. You'd have to go and get Antal Sundar. Had you known that you would... That's the earlier cases. You get Antal Sundar for such a case.
What's the difference of just fulfilling the neder or doing a Torah in the dream?
No, so in other words, Rabbi Yehuda enables the conditions for the neder to be met, at least for his part.
Sure.
And then, okay, so then this poor woman is off the hook, and the husband's off the hook for having made this neder. Rabbi Shimon says, but if you do that, you're creating little terrorists.
Okay,
so he'll just, every time she burns the food, he'll make a neder.
So if Rabbi Shimon, right, his reasoning saying that I don't want to make it so that it's just
he has
normal.
To learn.
So what? But what is this guy then going to do? He's going to go and he's going to get a petach.
He'll get a petach for this neder, but then he'll learn I shouldn't make nedarim so lightly.
Also, he doesn't say specifically he's going to be responsible for getting the petach. I mean, that's not what happened, but he's just saying, don't get me involved in this thing. I mean, don't make a, you know.
Right. So in other words...
Yeah, if you have troubles with your wife, she's a terrible cook, fine, we'll help you, but this isn't the way. Right.
There's the pshat of the Gemara, or at least it appears that the Gemara is about Rabbi Yehuda was flexible with his own kavod for the sake of Shalom Bayis, and Rabbi Shimon was inflexible with his own kavod. But
it's also
but the Rashi
short-term, what's long-term.
Well, Rashi kind of fills in the blank and shows that that's not what it's really about. This is not principally, they're not motivated principally by concerns for their own kavod, right? The question is how to best ameliorate the problem. So Rabbi Shimon says, look, sometimes the shorter, there's a very quick solution. You take one bite and the whole thing is over. But that's just going to set up a case where three times a day she's cooking his meals, he's going to be shooting nedarim every time the microwave dings. And in order so that he shouldn't make such foolhardy nedarim, that is the case. I worked in a yeshiva once where there was a guy, he was like a heavyset guy. He was one of the rebbes. He was a heavyset guy. And the cook used to prepare a special portion for him that was basically burnt to a crisp. Like whatever everybody else was eating, he got one portion that was like not well done. It was just like charbroiled. So I said to him, "What is this?" So he says, "Look, when I first got married, I didn't know anything. You know, it was like a shidduch. It was like I didn't know anything about relationships, about marriage. I mean, he'd been. This story is the first year I got married was about 19 years ago. So he was then in his probably late 40s. So he said, I didn't know anything about marriage. My wife was a terrible cook. But my father told me, whatever your wife makes for you, you eat it. So my wife, she would just burn everything. So I'd come home every day from Kolel. I wouldn't be able to eat what she was making. So I would stop on my way home from Kolel. I'd have two slices of pizza. I'd have a falafel, you know, like from the bus to the apartment. Because I knew I couldn't eat what she was going to be serving me. Then I'd go home, but I'd have to eat something. So I'd eat a portion of this food. Because my father told me I'd eat whatever. And then she'd want to bring me more. And I'd say, oh, darling, no, it's so delicious. So, but because of that, that's how I got so heavy set. Because every day I was stopping and having like a falafel and two slices of pizza. At a certain point, I couldn't. I was a kollel guy. I couldn't afford to eat out every night, so I had to like start eating her food. So I got used to eating bread food. So now I can't eat anything else. Va'od ki hechi de lo litargile leminder hahu de omar lidabetayu konam shei. So the second. So one reason is the Gemara presents it as. You see, v'od. Right, so the Gemara presents it as two reasons. One reason is it's like a klola on this guy. He should drop dead and his children should be orphans. Which seems to say what? It's like for his kavod. And also, I want to, you know, prevent these frivolous nedarim. The Bach gets rid of the word va'od. In other words, it's not two separate reasons. The second half of the sentence comes to explain the first half. Right? In other words, the Bach interprets the Gemara, or the Girsa of the Bach is such as the way I explained it. It's not a matter of his kavod. It's a matter of educating people towards getting rid of these bad habits of nedarim.
Another good thing mentioned in Chazal is that instead of mimkomo, michvodo.
Right. Where is that from?
Just says mikitvei.
Oh, yeah. Hahidom is another case. Hahidom alad betayhu konam shei at nehnetli ad shetiroki bo Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel.
Ratching it up, yeah. So.
Right, you're osir bahano from me until you go and spit on Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Why he wanted her to do this what he had against Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Gemara does not say. But he wanted to cause some. In other words, these are like using. You know, it's like I don't know, like in all the terrorist movies, right? You know, they put the gun to the head of like the captive, the hostage, and they force the hostage to do something terrible. You know, to someone else, for whatever reason. So this is a type of psychological warfare he's using against his wife, that he makes a neder on her until she'll go and spit on Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Atat v'rakak alevushe. So she goes and she, I mean, I'm filling in the blanks. She goes and she puts a little spit. She doesn't like, you know, she so spittles a little bit on his garment. So the question is, has she fulfilled the neder? In other words, he said the neder is she has to go spit on Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. He doesn't say how much spit. Like you'd imagine, like the halachos of spitting on people. Like it's like a, like probably there's a book like this, right? Like, you know, you need a kazayas of spit, a chazonish kazayas. There has to be a little phlegm in it. It has to. The art scroll with the right, like the art scroll. What's that? Where the art scroll Asher Yotzer, right? Asher Yotzer Kilchasa. Hagbo Glila Kilchasa, which is not a joke. There's such a book. It's like this thick. It's, you know, two volumes, one for Hagbo, one for Glila. So spitting on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Kilchasa. So she goes. So Amar Lei Rav Acha. So did a little bit of spittle onto his garment? Does that count to be mate her from the neder? So Amar Lei Rav Acha Midifti Le Ravina Va. When the husband made this condition, what's the condition of spitting on Rabbi Shimon Gamliel? To cause embarrassment to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So is like a little bit of poo-poo on his sleeve, is that sufficient zilzul to have fulfilled the neder? Look at the Rashi. Hazeluta de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, kemechavein v'chol kama de lo yarka ba'anpe, mamash, until she'll spit, mamash, spit in his face, leka ziluta. It's not a sufficient zilzul, it's not a sufficient affront to his honor in order to fulfill the neder. Ve'ilo lo have muteret. De'ilo dat kach amra kadei le ziluta. Right, and is it or is it not a sufficient offense to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in order to get her off the hook of this neder?
Sorry, sometimes it seems like the Gemara and Rashi together are talking about future generations.
Well, look, in other words, these are agadot. I'm not sure that we have to believe that these are actual cases that happened. Could be literary constructs in order to, you know,
lighten everybody's mood a little bit.
I think to lighten the mood, or to show, you know, to satirize, you know. Look, a satire doesn't mean that the case in the satire never actually happened. Right. But as a literary genre, the satire is there to like show what happens when things go to excess. I just, you know, edited this collection of Agnon's satires. Agnon has like these political satires about like the early years of the state. I mean, you know, this the story, the Klipat Pur Zahav, the orange peel. No, it's a story that kids still learn in school. It's probably the most well known in this. It's about somebody goes and throws an orange peel in the middle of the street. You know, it's like it's mid-40s Yerushalayim. So he throws an orange peel in the middle of the street, and it's like a Chad Gadya story. One person comes along and trips on the orange peel and scatters like all the contents of her purse, and then somebody else comes and trips on the contents of the purse, until like the whole of Yerushalayim is backed up over this one orange peel, this Klipat Pur Zahav that's in the middle of the street. Everybody's yelling and shouting, how come they don't come and clean away the orange peels? And it's the Iriyah's fault because they don't sweep the streets and people pay taxes. What do they do with the taxes? And etc. P.S. While this is happening, traffic is backed up all over because of this you know, for want of an elder, the kingdom was lost because of this one orange peel. Along comes the Baal Sefer Medina, who the reader is meant to imagine as Agdon himself, and says, this is crazy. I will pick up the orange peel myself. While everybody's arguing over what's going on, the solution is at hand. All you have to do is pick up this orange peel and everybody can get along with their stuff. When he does that, a policeman comes and finds him for collecting garbage without a license. It's a satire of the bureaucracy. And he's about to take him down to the station to book him. Elama, it's just about lunchtime. The policeman is makbid not to miss lunchtime, so the poor guy is off the hook. This is a satire. But anybody that's bumped up against actual bureaucracy knows that it could have easily happened. So that's the point of a satire. So these are satires. These are satires. So anyway, so is spitting on his garment sufficient zilzul? Omer le merik almani de Rabbi Shimon Gamliel zilute rabatahi. That's to spit on the garment of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is, oh boy, is that a big enough disrespect to get a rope hook. So think of it as a satire, right? Right, like you're niggling. Somebody comes along and, like, can you imagine, like there was that thing a few years ago where did it happen? Must have happened in Iraq.
Shoes.
Where Bush is in Iraq with whoever was in charge of Iraq in those days, and some reporter throws his shoe, which in the Arab world is a great sign of disrespect. Now, he completely missed Bush. He didn't hit him. But, you know, like the Iraqis took this guy and put him away in a dungeon and they were going to, like, execute him or something because it was a terrible embarrassment for them. And Bush was very magnanimous and said, well, you know, it didn't actually hit me. No harm, no foul. Somebody threw a shoe at Bush. So is it a zilzul in the president of the United States? Well, what kind of shoe was it? Was it a hard sole shoe or was it a sneaker? Did it hit him or did it miss him by a country mile? Right? So that kind of niggling about the details, like, overlooks the fact that, you know, Bechozot, it was still... Well, Bechozot, it's still a pretty big zilzul. So there, I think, lies the satire here. Right? How much spit was it? Did it land on his sleeve, or did it land on his person, or did it land on his face? Was she makayim like a whole heftza of zilzul of ikavod, or was it only like, you know, was she only yotzei derabonon, right? No, you're missing the point. The whole thing, the whole story is when does the zilzul of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel begin? When the stupid husband made the neder before she did anything. Hahud Omar Lidibetaihu Konam Shi at Nenetli Ad Shetter I Mum Yafe Shebich. The Rabbi Yishmoel Bar Yossi. Not the same Rabbi Yishmoel who said all the women are beautiful. It's a different Rabbi Yishmoel. I make a neder, you're Asr Bahana from me. Until you show something beautiful about yourself to Rabbi Yishmoel Bar Yossi. It's not erotic. It sounds like, you know, whatever you think. Right?
Oh, it's not mum, it's mi'umah.
Well, so in other words, there's two ways. In other words, it's mi'umah. Something, a thing. And this guy's married to the ugliest woman. You know that contest every year on the internet, the world's ugliest dog, and it's always like one of those hairless dogs. You know, with the tongue sticking out and the eyes bulging out. This woman was the ugliest. She won the ugly prize. So the husband says, look, I can't stand it anymore. Until you can show that there's one beautiful thing. Right? Until there's one beautiful thing. Right? So, you know, so it's either mum can mean also like a thing, or mi'uma is literally a thing. So Omar Lahem Shema. So Rabbi Yishmael Bar Yossi, the way the Gemara is worded is that Rabbi Yishmael Bar Yossi is like sitting like with his guys, and he says, "Oh no, she's going to come, and I'm going to have to like say one good thing about her, right? I'm going to have to like find one beautiful attribute that she has in order to get this stupid husband off the hook." So, what is it? Like, you know, guys, what's the... Like, what's... Well, there's got to be something, right? What? No, that's not... So he says, it's the going to... So, Omar Lahem Shema Roshana. Maybe she's got, like, a nice-shaped head. Amrulo Skalgal. No, it's, like, round. It's, like, you know, like a Charlie Brown head. Shema Serana, maybe she's not got nice hair. Domela Anitse Pishtan. So like straw. It's like, you know, like flax. It's like, you know. Shema Neanod, maybe she's got pretty eyes. Trutotain. She's got like squinty eyes. Like whatever each of these things are is irrelevant, but they're the definition of unattractive, or at least societally defined. Shemos Nehanot, maybe she's got nice ears. Kfulotain. Nah, Dumbo. She's got jumbo size ears, Dumbo ears. They're twice as big as they should be. Shemachotmana, a pretty nose. Balumhu. No, it's like all smashed in. Shemasvoteanot. Maybe she's got pretty lips. Avotain. They're like two zucchinis. Shema Tzavarana. Maybe she's got a pretty neck. Shakutu. No, she's got like a stubby neck. Shema Kresena. Maybe she's got maybe she's got a slim figure. Maybe she's got a pretty belly, you know. No, Tzabal. She's got a pot belly. Shema Raglano, nice legs. I mean, first of all, the Gemara itself is just fascinating. Like, you know. Rachavot Keshel Avaza. She walks around, she got like geese legs. Now, I don't, whatever geese legs are. You know, like, I don't know, what do they call it? Duck feet?
Bow legs.
Bow legs, yeah. All right, so Shema Shmana. Maybe she has a good name. Maybe she's a Baalat Shem Tov. Maybe she's got a good name. Maybe she's got a pretty, like, what does that mean? So maybe, where was it? Oh, shechachti, maybe it was in the back. So maybe she's got a good name. Maybe what he meant was, maybe she's got a good reputation, right? In other words, beauty is not only physical pulchritude, right? Maybe she has, you know, a good reputation, right? So they don't understand. They don't say like, you know, oh yes, they say she's a balas chesed. They say she gives a lot of tzedakah. They say she's a good cook. They say she's a good mother. They say she's a good daughter. They say she's the, you know, organizes the kiddush, right? They say she excels at everything she does. Except make herself pretty, right? So they say, no, what's her name? Lachluchit Shma. Her name is Lachluchit. Her name is Shmutz. So Amar Lahen, Ohad, Yafa Korinota, Lachluchit. Shehi Miluch Lechet, Bemumin. So, right, well, at least her name fits... Her name fits her. So bazeh, she's got one good thing going for her. That at least her name—it's a joke, right? Right. I mean, you could hear Groucho telling this joke, right? Dear Rosanna, Rosanna, Dana. Right? I got a rash. I got gas. I got the hives. Well, dear Mr. Fitter, you sound like a real attractive guy. Mela, you're young. But how do you guys not get you? You got it. So you look like a real attractive lady, Mrs. Lech Luchit. All right, so he let her off the hook. So there was that one good thing about her, that at least her name, like it's not like her name was Yaffa. Right? Her name was Matim to who she was. All right, okay. Amalan Yaffa Korinota, Lech Luchit, Shei Meluch Lechet Bemumin, V'Sharya. And he let her off the hook. That was how she got off the... Because he was able to say one good thing about her. Okay, it's got to be a joke. I mean, it's got to be a satire.
This would prove the other Jewish woman said that every Jewish woman has something beautiful about them. So in other words,
here, what is the one thing that's beautiful about her?
That her name fits.
That she's disgusting and her name is Pig. I mean, that she's really... I mean, the description is...
But even if you go to these far extremes, you can still find some.
Okay. It's hard to say that it squares it. It's a satire of, like, where you get with Nedarim. So it's a Purim spiel, right? This is something that you could find... I mean, if it weren't lifted straight from the pages of Gemara, right, this skit could appear in a Purim spiel of any yeshiva about learning Nedarim that year. Right? Hahu Bar Bavil. So there was a guy from Bavil, the Sarek La'arad Yisrael. And for a Shidduch, he went to Eretz Yisrael to find a bride. So it's a mixed marriage. It's an Eretz Yisraeli woman and a Bavli husband. Now, what is their common language? No. Aramaic. But Palestinian Aramaic and Babylonian Aramaic, while similar enough that they could communicate, was not exactly the same. And this creates this is the basis for the comedy. Years ago, a long time ago, 30 years ago this past summer, I went to Camp Hask for the first time. And in those days, there were a few Brits that came to camp for the summer. And we were all, very parochial New York Jews, New York, New Jersey, not used to anything exotic, like someone from Golders Green or Hendon. And so it's like exciting to meet somebody that talks with a funny accent. So one night, after the campers were asleep, the counselors were all sitting around in the lounge, and they used to put out like refreshments, popcorn and potato chips. And one of the Brits says, "Pass the crisps." Not a single one of us knew what she was talking about. So she points at the potato chips. And she said, in England, those are called crisps. I said, here we call them potato chips. Isn't that Indian? This is before the internet. This is before, before the global village. Isn't that interesting? Who was it that said? George Bernard Shaw said that the British and the Americans are divided by a common language. So there was this one guy, Stephen Glucksman, a good friend of mine. So he spent the rest of the summer trying to convince the Brits of a whole lexicon of words. The next night, he points and says, "Pass the elephant pops." "What's the elephant pops?" So he points at the popcorn. He says, "What do you call it?" They said, we call it popcorn. He says, here in America, it's called elephant pops." the whole summer was his experiment in, what do you call that in misprogramming them to all types of things. So this is what happens in this next Gemara. So he goes to Eretz Yisrael. Nasivi tita. So he marries a girl. Omar la bishili li tre talfi. Make for me a couple of lentils. She says, "What do you want for dinner tonight, honey?" She says, "Make me a couple of lentils." So what do we mean when we say a couple of, literally speaking, what is a couple of lentils? Two lentils. Two beans. But what do we mean when we say a couple of lentils?
Two kinds.
No.
I don't want to eat too much. I don't eat a lot.
Make some. Don't make a ton. Make a little bit. You know, it's like I had this friend in high school, a very annoying father. You call up and you say, "Hi, can I speak to David?" Yes. Would you like to speak to him? You can speak to him, but right? So, right, so it's true that he has you know, the strict literal definition on his side, but it makes him for a very annoying person.
Amelia
Bedelia.
I think you would say, "May I speak to him?" You would say, "No one, hang up." But I had a friend with a father like that.
What was her name? So she said, "Make me a couple of lentils." He comes home, and on his plate there are literally two lentils. Right? What are the Amelia Bedelia cases? She says, dress the chicken. They come home, the chicken is still raw, but it's got like a little apron on it, and trim the drapes, and she cuts the drapes. Oh, dust the furniture.
Right.
So she puts dust onto the furniture. Right? So she makes two. So ratachala, so he gets angry at her. Lemachar amadla b'shili le griva. Make me a whole saw. Make me. It's like, you know. It's like 8 liters of lentil. Meaning, say, make me a proper amount of lentils. So b'shili le griva. So she made him. She comes home, and there is 8 liters of lentils cooked. So Amar le, zili aitili tre butsini. So here, these are words. The first case is a case of, like, you know, knowing metaphorically what somebody means, not literally. The second case are, they had different ways of referring to different things. So he says, bring me these two gourds. But in Eretz Yisrael, these things were shrage. They were lamps. Now, this was just simply a miscommunication. In other words, the word, they were either homonyms, or they were, one word meant one thing in one place and another. What would be an example here? What would be a parallel example here in English?
I know my father once went to England, and he lost his bags, so he had to go to the department store to get some clothes, and he went into the department store and asked for suspenders. And they said, "Well, is that for your wife?" And he said, no, it's for me. And garters.
Oh, garters. Or like pants, and his pants in English mean michnasayim, but in England it means underpants, right? So he would say, bring me pants, and so she shows up with underpants instead of trousers. So he means gourds, and she brings him a candle or a lamp. Omar la zile tavre yaton al reshe de bava. So go and smash it at what's above the gate. I mean, it's like an expression. Like, oh, and she brings him a lamp. She brings him an earthenware lamp. Right? So he says, go smash it outside. But the expression he uses, go smash it against the gate. Havayativ bava ben buta abava. So at the gate of the city where the Chachamim used to sit, Noda Basharim Bala, right? The gate was where the Chachamim would sit to judge cases. So there was an Amora named Bava ben Buta. Bava ben Buta appears in a variety of Gemaras. He's known for his modesty. So he says, go break it on the head of Bava. Meaning, go smash it against the gate. She goes out. He sees her going out to the gate. But what does she think he means? Smash it on Bava's head. So she goes and smashes it on his head. So Amar La, what the heck are you doing? Amar Le, Kach Tzivani Bali? My husband told me to do this. Omar, at asit ratzon ba'alech hamakom yotzi mimcha shnei banim kebava ben buta. So, well, I guess if you did the will of your husband, you should be rewarded with having two sons like me, like Bava ben Buta. I mean, who's something of a comic character in this Gemara, because he gets his head smashed in with a lamp.
He also sees the positive in it.
What?
He also sees the positive in the whole
situation. I mean, I guess he sees the humor in the whole thing. So the Ran says here, Shnei Banim Kivava Keneged Trin Shrage, because she had two lamps in her head, in her hand. Va'at Eochig Hai Uvda La'ashmu'inan Chasidute Devava Ben Buta. The story comes to teach us the righteousness of the piety of Bava Ben Buta. Ki Heichi Da'at Eocha Uvda La'derabanan Shimon Ben Gamliel V'Rabbi Yishmoel. Right, because it's certainly a contrast to the other Chachamim, to Rabbi Shimon, who says, you know, better that he should die and his kids should be orphans. Right? So he was, he took it with a grain of salt. He took it with a grain of salt. The last Gemara is Bechlal, not related to Nedarim. What is its place here?
It's communication.
What? Well, it's related. It comes agav to Shalom Bayit. But how does it play into... In general, how do all these Gemaras, but particularly this last piece, all these Agadot, but particularly this last piece about the miscommunication...
But how you should be careful with the words, whether it's for a nether or not for
a nether. Yeah, right. With the power of language, the power of words, that words matter, and words have meaning, and meaning is contextual. And, well, you know, like as my wife often tells me, which is kind of funny because it's what my mother always used to tell me, it's not what you say, but how you say it. In other words, communication is about a variety of things. It has to do with the content of what's spoken. It has to do with how it's spoken. It has to do with the larger society in which it's spoken. Right, in Eretz Yisrael it means a gourd. In Bavel it means a gourd. In Eretz Yisrael it means a lamp. She wasn't being clever when she made two lentils. I mean, she wasn't being smart. I mean, a clever woman, regardless of the language or the culture she lives in, you know, should have said, why does he only want two lentils for dinner? But she wasn't trying to make a joke. She wasn't doing what my friend's father used to do in high school, where he'd wait on the line. Right? The metaphor doesn't work the same way. Right? There's a couple means two. Right? A couple literally means two. But that's not how we use the language. Right? I say, give me a couple of potato chips. I don't mean for you to give me two potato chips. I mean, give me some potato chips.
Or if my kid said to me, I should do something else. I'll do a second.
Right.
They don't literally mean
that. They don't literally mean a second.
Right.
When Israeli says, on Chamesh Dakot, it doesn't really mean another 5 minutes.
Right. No, Israelis are worse. They say, Ani kfar ba.
Maybe
you kfar ba. You haven't even left yet, right? That these things are. Oh, this happened to me once when we were moving into the house. You know, like, you know, you'd have to have everything delivered, like the washer and the dryer, and the guy would have to come into it. First, you'd have to like take off a day of work for them to come and bring the refrigerator, And then you'd have to take another day off of work for them to install the, what do you mean, install the refrigerator? You plug it in the wall, install the dishwasher, right? Because the guy that brings it can't install it. So I came out here. We weren't living here yet, but I came here because they were coming to install something. And I'm waiting and waiting and waiting. They don't come. And they said, kara puncture. So I thought literally they had a flat tire. So I wait, and an hour later, they're still not there. Right? They were coming from Talpiot. Right? So to change a tire, a puncture, literally a puncture. Right? So I thought they were talking literally, that they had a flat tire, so they had to change a tire. Seder, so I gave him an extra hour. How long does it take to change a tire? An hour later, I call, I said, he's still not here. How long does it take to change a tire? They say, oh, no, it's not a tire. Right? A puncture means like something went wrong. Right? The whole, there was a monkey wrench in the works. Right? The schedule got messed up. So now I wasted an extra hour. Meaning you're not coming today. That's what they're. So that language matters. Right? This goes back to what we saw in the Rambam at the beginning. That language matters, and that the intersection between language and midot is very profound. Remember, the Rambam talked about nedarim being problematic. The Torah has a whole category of things called nedarim. You're allowed to take nedarim. And they can be a powerful tool in refining your personality. Right? Whether you take a neder or you just really make a very serious kind of resolution that you're not going to have to eat two sufganiyot a day for all 8 days of Hanukkah. Right? But the force of taking that...
Bli neder.
No, I'm already over. It's already the third day of Hanukkah. the force of kind of taking that vow, of making that declaration, is meant to influence your behavior, influence your personality, so that the intersection between language, what you say and how you say it, and your personality, and improving yourself and refining yourself, these are all coming to a head in these themes. And you see all of these cases that we saw now, they're all cases of what? No, that's the last case. But they're all cases of people getting themselves into trouble with their big... I mean, this is... Ralph Crampton could store in every one of these agadot. Right? Every one of these agadot could have been the plot of a Honeymooners episode. Right? He opens his big fat mouth and he gets himself into trouble. Or Fred Flintstone, which is, of course, Ralph Crampton in prehistoric cartoon figure. Right? He opens his big fat mouth and he gets himself into trouble, and then he has to spend the rest of the episode dancing around it so that Alice or Wilma will then he'll get back to a state of shalom bias, right? And the episode will end with a kiss. Right? That's the whole premise of all these Gemaras.
Isn't Alice the robot?
No, Alice is Ralph Crampton's wife.
Alice is Ralph Crampton's wife.
Look, it's good you come to learn Gemara, but there's like, you know, there's certain things, no excuses.
Married
for.
To Alice. Fred Flintstone was married to Wilma. George Hudson was married to Jane.
So each of these agadot could be a Honeymooners episode, right? Because he opens there. Each of them, he opens his big fat mouth. It's interesting. There are no cases here of the women making a crazy neder. In all of the, like, some of these Gemaras appear to be terribly misogynistic.
Well, that's, I mean, the husband could cancel out, so sort of...
The what?
He can cancel her in the darim, so it kind of defeats the purpose of her making another for him.
Okay, it's true, but you can imagine the Gemara putting, and the Chachamim can cancel his Nadarim with Hataras Nadarim.
Well, no, he can be Mayfair.
Seder, okay, correct, he can be Mayfair, but
as a concept.
But just as an Agada, you could imagine a scenario where we give, and maybe elsewhere in the Masechta, there are cases of a woman makes some. There will be when we talk about, you know, a man. The next parak, which I assume will continue on about Nara Hamurasa, is about an engaged, you know, after Erusin. So she's betwixt and between her father, who could cancel her nedarim, and her husband, who she's not fully married to, and now she's kind of under the thumb of both of them for the purposes of nedarim from the period of erusin to nisuin, which today doesn't really exist because we do it almost simultaneously under the chuppah. But whose jurisdiction is she under for that? But you can imagine a scenario where a woman makes a neder that's crazy and parallel to these husbands' nedarim. But you don't have that. So even though these are seemingly misogynistic by our standards, this whole Gemara, the whole discussion of Yishmael ben Yossi about this ugly woman, she's disgusting, she's fat, she's got her nose, her eyes, her legs, her, right? And he's mater. I mean, that's the joke, right? He's mater. The husband must have been delighted to have her back, right? But that's the point is that the joke on all of these cases, the joke is on the husband. The husband is the one that's portrayed either as the shlamil, or as the rasha, or as the person who's really responsible for the detriment of his own shalom bayis, right? At the expense of kavod chachamim, right? At the expense of turning all of the whole value system of the Torah upside down through his nedarim. That's the satire here. That's the joke. The case in the beginning of Rabbi Yehuda, so it seems like Rabbi Yehuda is a good guy, and Rabbi Shimon, okay, we can try to kind of like give an, you have to, in order for Rabbi Shimon to be a good guy, you have to give the explanation, you have to explain, like, you know, why it's, you know, on the surface to say the guy should die and his kids should be orphans is a little harsh. So Rabbi Yehuda has a good proof. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is also mochel on his kavod. Erases his name for the sota in order to make shalom bayis. But the two cases are not exactly parallel. Because the husband that brings his wife, right, under the conditions in which a husband can bring a wife as a sota, the husband is doing what the Torah basically tells him he can and perhaps should do. But the husband in our case should not make a neder like this against his wife who's not a Julia child. What? The two cases are not the same. The husband is at fault for doing this. Right? Order takeout. Send her to cooking school. Learn to cook yourself. There are all types of solutions. Okay.